Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode of Three in a Row. Another beautiful day. Damola, how are you doing?
Doing all right, man. It's finally feeling like summer in New York. The weather is 24 degrees after some disgusting rain we had last week. And the sun isn't going down till like 8 p.m. here. So that's lovely. How about you guys? I heard you people had a coronation this weekend.
Yeah, man. Long live the king. Oh, God save the king.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Oh, God save the king, innit? We had a coronation. We had a day off work this week. So all is blessed. I'm thankful to Charles for that. And I mean, if that's how's things on your end before we get into the football?
Man, I'm tired, man. Lagos is hot. Lagos is tired. Man, my United is tired, man. We thank God for life still.
The only difference between your description of Lagos and what my friend told me is the smelly part. She added Lagos is smelly.
All right. Yeah, Lagos is smelly, bro.
I mean, guys, speaking of smelly matters, let's start with the obvious place. The drama that's been happening over the past, 3 weeks since we last recorded, the Premier League title race. I believe the last time we stopped on this beautiful story, Damo, I was telling you to take heart that it was all over after Liverpool. Little did I know what was to come. In terms of what these guys went on to do next, and obviously subsequently what happened at Manchester City. Damola, do you want to talk us through your emotions through as Arsenal was kind of going on this four-game unbeaten run, or rather four-game without a win run?
Damola, can you please start with your expectations prior, and then you can
My honest expectations for the run were 3 wins, 1 loss. So it's been since the Liverpool game, it's been 4 games. We've had Southampton, West Ham, City, and Newcastle. City game, deep down, I expected us to lose. So I wasn't surprised we lost. I was irritated by how much we lost because it felt like a total, like, you know when you think like you're as good as your senior brother, then your senior brother beats you up. That's what it felt like. And that was painful on that one. But not necessarily the loss, because I didn't expect us to beat City, but the way we lost. The ones that really irritated me to my core were the Southampton games and the West Ham games. For some reason, you know, Southampton decided to be our bogey team again. That's useless team. I'm happy they are going down. They're my I'm happy they are going down. And yeah, I know sad for Walcott, but it's not my fault. That's his boyhood club. And we couldn't, you know, handle against West Ham. It's like weird ones. The West Ham one felt like another repeat of the Liverpool one, with the added caveat that my star boy missed a penalty, which was very unexpected. So my emotions.
Yeah, I forgot about that. You know, that penalty really did cost us.
My overall arching realization throughout the run was like sadness. Because, like, I don't know, you could almost taste it and you could almost see a path that had us winning it, even if we lost the City. But then we just didn't take care of business when we're meant to. And it came back to bite us. So now with 2020 hindsight, looking at where we're at the start of the season and now, the one good thing I know is that Arteta is going to learn. The team is going to learn. We're the second youngest team, if not the youngest team in the league, and we're fighting for trophy against this mad City machine. Except, like, there are very few seasons in Premier League history where there's a chance 90 points won't win you the Premier League. And this is one of those. So on one end, yes, when it mattered, we didn't take care of our business, and that's something we have to improve on, which I think we will next season. On the other end, you just have to put your respect to City. City, since mid-January, are like 18-1-1. Like 18 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw. Something nasty like that. At a certain point, you have to recognize where you are as a team and just be like, it is what it is. But yeah, sad. Because I really wanted it. We move regardless.
Yo, to be honest, Arsenal really let me down in the games after, because it's when there was no pressure, that's when we went back to start winning again and playing normal football and beating Chelsea and beating Newcastle. But as soon as the pressure was like on their necks,
yep,
they choked at the men. I have to admit, because these guys, they have the ability clearly to have won those games. But the only thing that was different was the mental pressure.
That wasn't the only thing that was different. It was a big part. Choked. But that wasn't the only thing.
It was. Arteta should have made changes earlier, so, to be fair.
To be honest. Like, yeah, they are individual players to be like, they cost us individually. But to be honest, I put it more on the coach. I think this pressure moment was just another reminder that, look, Arteta is a young coach. He's going to learn. And the mistakes he made, he's not going to make it again. Because there's no reason to me, especially after the Palace game, that Holding needed to hold his... Holding needed to keep his place in our starting 11.
Palace at home.
This thing Guardiola has been good at, where it's like, he nips a problem in the bud even before they start losing. Right? I think, and that was part of the problem, right? Before the draw against Liverpool, which you could say, okay, that was Liverpool, but even before the draw against West Ham and the one against Southampton, right? You watch Holding play, you could see the effect of him playing on our team. We effectively had to change the way we build up play, the way we pressured opponents. Holding, and it's not like Holding is a bad player. No, it's just for the style of play we do and how interconnected our team is.
Yeah.
Holding is a liability. And we're not a team that's at a point where we could afford to carry that liability. Maybe a different team would have been able to, but we're just not there yet. Now, why I put it on Arteta is the signs of Holding's effects on our overall game, whereas there as early as that Palace game, they weren't like new. But we won the Palace game, everybody kept moving. Even the Liverpool game, they were there, but everybody chalked it up as Liverpool, especially since we came away with a draw when we didn't feel like we didn't need to. But personally for me, after that West Ham one, there is no reason you can't play Kiwa against last of the table Southampton at home. Because the difference in the way, like you can tell he's not a natural, like right-sided centre-back, the way he builds out our stuff. But there's such a big difference in the way we play compared to when he's in there versus when Holding is there. There's a difference in the way we can defend space.
No, but you're forgetting that it also coincided with Thomas Partey leaving the team and Jorginho coming in. So I don't think...
In fairness, true. That's also... Like, yeah, I get what you're saying, though. That's
like,
not the only
thing. Individual players let Arteta down. Like, Thomas Partey let Arteta down. Rob Holding to an extent, but then again, he's always been a limited player.
Sorry, Tope.
I don't think...
How did Thomas Partey let Arteta down?
Partey let Arteta down,
I think, really badly. Partey... Because in the moment of the season where you need the experience that Partey brings, you need the heads that have been there before, that have done this thing. This is when Partey like became his most inconsistent, started making the most mistakes, like started, he lost his head in terms of like, his passing accuracy and stuff like that.
One of those West Ham goals were on the back.
Happened in West Ham. Happened in stuff like the guy, I don't know what happened to Partey, you know. But to be fair, I don't want to turn to a sour Arsenal guy. To be fair, it's not that.
Yeah, no. This is not like us being sour. This is just objectively looking at our season. Yeah. Says, look, we had a chance to do it. We did it. These are the reasons why. There's the individual player part, but there's also the coach part where he didn't adapt to a changing situation quickly.
Why did he start Fabio Vieira in Southampton? That was another killer.
That
what he sees in that guy, like only he sees, honestly.
No, it. So this is the other thing. My guy Nii tells me this all the time. It's there's something we see when we watch them on the pitch, but Arteta is the one that works with them in training day after day.
I fully believe in that saying, but like he needs to show us the receipts for Fabio Vieira.
Yeah, no, I agree. Vieira hasn't
a game against Southampton even more.
And do you know also weird? So to be honest, that Southampton one I blame Holding more, but separate combo. But the party one is very interesting because I think we've spoken about this a bit with like a balanced midfield and some of the problem you guys have with Casemiro, where sometimes that control you need in a game, he just like doesn't have it. And he enjoys the game going back and forth too much when the game doesn't require that from him. So with Partey, especially against West Ham, we had that issue. And against Southampton, I have no idea what he was just doing on the pitch, man. It was like you could tell he was an 8 converted to a 6 in those two games. He just lost control. And yeah, Arteta didn't adjust soon enough. And we paid the price for that. Then we went to City and we got slapped up.
let's switch lanes and talk about another club in London that we faced recently, Chelsea, because like
they just avoided relegation.
Yeah, they're really in turbulent times, and I wanted to get you guys' take on first of all, the appointment of Frank Lampard, and if you thought that was a good decision. And I guess now it seems, by all accounts, Pochettino is the next up, or at least that's what is being pushed, probably by Pochettino's team in hindsight, to the media. Ifatu, what do you think? Like, what is happening? Surely the state of affairs is embarrassing.
Yeah, it's actually really terrible. What has it been like for Lampard? It was 6 games or 7 games, and then 6 defeats.
If you count 10 defeats in a row, if you count it back with Everton, but yes, right. 6 straight L's.
That's super embarrassing. But I think they won their last game away at Brentford, right? So I don't know, maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel somewhere for them. Chelsea have a really great team, we know that they have a really expensive team. But more importantly, they have a talented squad. You know that the talent is there. They didn't just buy these players for no reason. They must have exhibited certain characters and qualities in their previous clubs, you know, that forced Chelsea to splurge so much on them. It's just about who can get the best out of these players. And clearly, we all know that Lampard is not the one. We knew it before he came in. We knew it. We know it now. And we know it. I don't want to curse him or anything, but like I don't think he's a top level manager by any account.
He's ruined himself with this one. Now he's ruined himself.
Yeah, he needs to have a chat with Gary Neville.
I mean, I'll put it this way, man. If you are going off like what the person had achieved, the only reason Lampard got that job is, you know, Chelsea love, man, fan love.
Yeah,
because after he fumbled it the first time with Chelsea, then fumbled it at Everton.
Yep.
It didn't make sense that he should get another job in the profile of
Chelsea. To be fair, this is not, it's just an interim role.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it, like, okay, you need someone to help stabilize the ship a bit before you can make a permanent hire, but like, yo, this is...
Todd Boehly is out of his depth. He needs to step down and let somebody else be the front-facing runner of the club, because it's getting a bit embarrassing. And nothing has, like, you can tell that this is truly an organization where no one cares anymore.
And,
in terms of,
they don't know how to care.
Headless chicken, basically.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying around the acquisition, where I was like, Abramovic going is bad, and them getting a billionaire owner is like bad for those of us who don't like Chelsea. But as long as Marina is not there, I have hope. And it looks like Marina not being there is giving me more hope than before. Like Ifatu said, that's a quality squad. Individual players, quality. They just need someone to figure it out for them. And not only on the pitch, at the executive level, you can tell there's a lack of football knowledge
direction.
At the executive level.
Yep.
Direction. Yeah, I agree. And they're the kind of team that can literally be competing for something, you know, beautiful next season as well. That's how much talent is in there.
I can't lie. Great. I don't want them to figure it out. Because they will have next season no Europe, man. And last time Chelsea had this season no Europe.
Shout out to Mikhailo, Mudryk for being a flop. Really appreciate
Mikhailo,
that.
Please,
yeah.
You can.
There's the guy that got arrested in the Emirates Stadium for shining a laser on his eyes.
Yeah, that was daft. He shouldn't have done
that.
Yeah,
really dumb.
But Mikhailo, I have a tiny bit of hope. Please, if you can, just I'm on my knees, bro. Ikram, just if you can, like outside the box, screamer.
Why do you want Mikhailo? What? Oh, again?
Against who?
City.
Hot take. I think City could lose to Everton, by the way. Just saying.
To be honest, if Everton didn't slap up Brighton.
I was thinking exactly that. Once I saw Everton had slapped Brighton, I was like, fuck. That was the game. I knew Everton had one home monster performance in them before the end of the season. I was hoping it would come against Man City, but it might have come one game too early.
Yeah, and it's also annoying because Brighton is now going to come and try to show us shiggy at the Emirates.
No, we're
going
to beat them. Let's go to Manchester because it's... first of all, congratulations to Newcastle, almost. But it's looking a bit like squeaky bum time for the Champions League.
I don't know why I said congratulations to Newcastle. Liverpool may pip them.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool are 1 point behind, but Manchester United have a game in hand. And, of course, Newcastle are 2 points ahead of Manchester, but also with the game in hand on Liverpool. So if any of the United's door, can I say it's looking quite tantalizing for Liverpool, just 3 points behind Newcastle?
My hot take is... someone between Newcastle and United drops out and Liverpool makes it.
Bro, that would be so sad, man, because they actually don't deserve it. Newcastle and Man United better finish third and fourth, respectively. Honestly speaking, I was doing like real intrusive analysis, and I thought, well, Newcastle, they truly are the third best team in the Premier League this season. They deserve to be number three. Anything other than that is going to be... anything other than that would be a false reflection of what actually transpired this season. So yeah, I really want Newcastle.
Whatever goes down is a true reflection of what transpired.
No. Sometimes you have
over 38 games, the table doesn't.
Nah. Sometimes the table can be quite dodgy still.
Also, for context, right? So these are Liverpool's remaining games. Leicester, who are definitely showing us they are going down. Aston Villa, who I think are secured in where they'll probably finish, so no pressure. And Southampton on the last day, who are most likely relegated by then. For our next friends, United, you have Chelsea at home, Wolves at home, Bournemouth away, Fulham at home. I think you should be able
paper,
to win
on paper. It's trickier running.
United, no, yeah. United need three out of four wins to qualify for the Champions League, and obviously, we have such a great...
able to win your home games.
Yeah, we have a great home record. So, honestly speaking, we should have no reason, you know, to not qualify for the Champions League.
Now, Newcastle have a trickier one because they are playing a bunch of relegation teams. So, they play late, fighting relegation. They play Brighton, still hanging on a crumb.
You see?
They play Leicester and they play Chelsea. With two games away, two games at home.
No,
the Brighton game is at home.
No, it's not. No, you see, they have tricky fixtures, especially with the relegation battling teams. Newcastle somehow drop points there and they come fifth. You think you want to tell me it's a true reflection of what happened?
No,
it would be if it happens, but I think the true reflection is that Newcastle are going to get it done.
Yeah,
Newcastle are going to get it done.
They're going to beat Leicester.
You know, they're going to slap them out. It's no problem.
I get what you're saying, but I will say that over 38 games, holistically, the table know they lie. Now you can look at small sections and be like the table lied. But over 38 games, the table no they lie. And if after 38 games, Newcastle isn't there, table no they lie. It was just a step too much for them.
Mm. I mean, I think I'm looking at it more from the angle of like the actual football that we watched, like who played good football, like who outplayed opposition. Like, you know, I was watching the Arsenal Newcastle game. And like the level of football that was on display that day was really, really high. Like from both sides, to be honest. Arsenal really surprised me with like how they managed to like, you know, to grind out that win. You know, they won with handicap 2-0, right? But that was by no chance the you know what actually happened. You know, Newcastle played so well. Newcastle opened Arsenal up on several occasions. Ramsdale was extremely immense, you know. So Newcastle, I mean, if City and Arsenal are obviously the two best teams in the league, Newcastle are the next best team, you know. There's no, I don't know if, which other team you can think of.
I get what you're saying, but again, the table reflects it. The difference between the top two versus the difference between the teams fighting for that remaining third and fourth spot is not as much. Like, you can clearly tell Arsenal and City have been the two best teams in the league this season.
Mm.
But that difference compared to like third, fourth, fifth, sixth is not the same. So
I think what's happening is that Liverpool are having a late resurgence. Newcastle, they started well, then they dipped in the middle, and then before picking up again. But Liverpool now is just from out of nowhere.
Liverpool
is six games unbeaten.
They realize now that, man, not only are we not going to win the league, but we're not even going to make Champions League spots. You know, what can we do?
I just have a question for you on this, if I had to. Mo Salah or Rashford, who has had a better season?
This season?
Yes.
That's a stupid question. Rashford has had a better season for me.
Oh, stupid question, really?
Salah.
Who do you think has more goals than assists?
Salah has had a good individual. Oh, can I say Rashford has had a good season?
This is the way to put it, man. The standards we know Salah of individually and as a team, he's falling below it. But his standards are higher than the standards of other people that we've seen greatly improve. Because just based off goals and assists, you'd think Salah has had a better season. But compared to where, as a team, Liverpool are versus United and some of the things they've achieved, then Salah has had a surpass season. It's the same way for Messi and Ronaldo. We consider 20 goals and assists a poor season. It doesn't mean it's not good. Mm. It's just by their standards, we expect better.
Yes, let's pray for Newcastle, guys, because it'll be a real shame if they don't make it, man.
To be honest, I don't know. I want them in Europa. Let them stretch their legs a bit.
No, I want. I'm excited to see the prospects of Newcastle and champs and all of that. They're a bloody good side.
Yeah, they're a good side. But is it weird to think that they'd get slapped up in champs?
No, I don't think they'll get slapped up in champs. I think they've proven smart enough to make the right signings, to bolster to an already decent team. It's not like none of these guys have been in the Champions League before. Kieran Trippier, he's been there. Sven Botman has been there. You know what I mean? Guimaraes.
Botman has been there with what team?
Wasn't he in Inter? Oh, no. Lille, sorry. He won the league now. And then that next season, they got to go to the Champions League now.
Or am I tripping? I didn't know that.
So, don't dwell on these guys now.
Okay. I get what you're saying, right? I will say this. Whereas the teams that are looking like they're going to be in the Champions League this coming season, right? City been there doing it, possibly making the final this season. Arsenal, some heritage. But the thing is, with Arsenal, to go to the next step, where we need to improve is very clear, right? I'm not going to dignify.
Did you say some experience?
Yeah, we haven't had experience in the last like 7 years. I'm not going to deny that. But Arsenal is a Champions League team.
Did you hear Tuchel when he was ad-libbing? to be embarrassed.
See, man, I'm not gonna lie, some of my most painful moments as an Arsenal fan have been in the Champions League. I'd rather have pain in the Champions League
as the hater, have
pain away at Bournemouth.
As the hater of Arsenal, these are like one of the like my fondest memories of, you know, mockery for Arsenal.
When Bayern,
I can't lie, man.
Bayern giving you man like 6-1.
Gosh.
You know how like during the Euros, there's always that one girl crying when England loses, man. And it feels like she's having a come to Jesus moment. My own was that 06 final. 06
final, the one versus Barcelona.
Yeah, man. It was conflicting.
Okay.
I really liked Eto'o and Ronaldinho, but Arsenal through and through. And that was a painful final.
We touched on it already, but let's go to the bottom and wrap it up for some teams, I guess. It's really between Forest, Everton, Leicester, Leeds, and Southampton. Southampton are gone. Forest and Everton both won today, meaning there's a 3-point gap between Forest and Leicester in 18th, and 2 points between Everton and Leicester. Is
it impossible for Southampton to make it?
We can just forget about it. They're on 24 points in 20th. Yeah. Leeds are 19th with 30 points, so they're already six points.
They can, so the maximum point they can end up with is 33 right now.
So they can still qualify if nobody else wins again.
Yeah, but that's not happening.
Yes. So their
goal difference is also abysmal, like worse. So.
Minus 33. It's disgusting. Are Leeds and Leicester going to go down? That's the real like question.
Leicester definitely going down.
What makes you say that?
Even the new manager bounce that's meant to come, it hasn't happened.
The guy's just playing gongo attack.
Yeah, bro. Their team just looks so disjointed.
And then they have the worst fixtures. I mean,
yeah, they have the worst.
Liverpool need every point they can have, so Liverpool will not be, you know.
No, nobody's giving them anything.
They have Liverpool, Newcastle, West Ham.
Newcastle away is not a good place to go to.
That's the key.
And West Ham is like probably mathematically safe-ish if they win their next game.
No, Newcastle, they have to drop points because they're facing Leicester and Leeds.
So this is my thing. I think Southampton is definitely going. I think Leicester is going. What I'm not sure about is if it's going to be Leeds or Everton.
Leeds are gone. Leeds have Newcastle, West Ham, Tottenham.
Newcastle, West Ham, Tottenham. They could come away with something. I trust Big Sam.
What is really shocking me is that Everton, Nottingham Forest have managed to get these 3 points.
Nottingham Forest aren't in the clear, but I think like they're maybe one win away.
Everton have City, Wolves, Bournemouth.
Everton will actually make it because they're going to win that last game at home against Bournemouth. They're going to win it.
I need them to win City, bro.
Yeah, Bournemouth are not going to care. They might beat City, man. You just never know. And then City will still win the league, though, because, they have cushion. Like,
Everton is fighting for their life. So, I'm praying for some, like,
I just think Goodison Park is one of those stadiums, man. Everything, you can just have one of those days.
Yeah.
You know, but
yes, you guys call your bottom three. Mine is Southampton, Leeds, Leicester. The current bottom three right now is my bottom three.
Man, this thing is impossible to predict. So I'm also just going to say, as things stand, that's so then they go home. I beat the championship.
Well, then it's three in a row because, I mean.
Did you guys see what Sam Allardyce said about his managerial ability?
And you know, shout out to Big Sam. It's basically the Yoruba thing where like you're giving your seniors respect because Guardiola didn't even fight him. But to me, what he said was utter nonsense.
Yes, for those who don't know, he basically said he's on the level. He's not saying he's better than, but he's definitely as good a coach as Klopp, Pep Guardiola and Arteta, that he's not saying he's better than them, but they're definitely not better than him. And in terms of football knowledge, there's nothing they know he doesn't. Shout out to the
old and the only man. Thing I will agree with him is that he has seen more than they have seen. But to say he's better, he's man, Big Sam was, I don't know what he was doing in retirement, but let's just say I hope it helps him for the remaining games of the season, because that was nonsense.
Before we move on from the Premier League, quick hot take from me. I'm just telling you now, Liverpool are back next season. Boom.
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about Victor Osimhen and Napoli. Napoli won the Serie A. Ooh.
To me, that's like one of the best things that has happened this like past week in terms of football for me. Because obviously Arsenal has not given me joy. But having Osimhen win the league with Napoli after the sensational season he had, despite being injured, he passed George Weah over the weekend for like most goals by African player. He's probably most likely going to finish highest goal scorer. He scored the winning goal to officially win them the trophy. It's, I have mad love for Victor, bro. He makes me happy. He makes me excited. I'm happy with where his career has taken him, and I'm happy with where it could lead to. And yeah, shout out to Napoli, man. It could have been Arsenal, but you know, at least I'm happy one of the other dogs.
Did you guys see the controversial Serie A post where they put a crown on
Kalia's
head?
Serie A is a mad league.
I didn't see. And then what did they put on Victor's head? I beg.
They didn't put shishi, bro.
Well, that was controversial.
Yeah.
I mean, it's open to interpretation, to be honest, you know. But yeah, because you can say, oh, Kai, I hate butchering his name. But yeah, Kvaratskhelia. He had a great season as well, right? It's not like he didn't, you know, it's not like he had an average season. He was, I won't say as instrumental, but close, you know, almost as important as
Victor Osimhen. He was probably the second most important.
Yeah, the very least the second, yeah. Yeah, you know. He did have a great season, but for the Serie A to just like, I mean, that's the governing football body in Italy, and then they go and then they just, you know, make that post on.
It rubbed me the wrong way, man. I can't lie.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put it. Like when I saw the post, it was one of those like, cause it for those who hadn't seen the post. It's basically an artwork of like Maradona, like
putting a crown,
anointing a new king.
They put Kvaratskhelia.
They put Kvaratskhelia.
So the new king of Syria.
Yeah, which is like weird because especially over the last like 2-3 months, it's become clear that without Osimhen, Napoli won't be winning this league. In fact, the period of time where they lost a couple of games in the Serie A, they got knocked out of the Champions League to Milan, things like that.
I mean,
coincided with Osimhen being injured.
I want to say that, you know, Napoli, you know, because this is Serie A that did this, not even Napoli as a club, right? And I actually wanted to like commend Napoli, you know, because it seems like they are on Osimhen's side, like, you know, within the Napoli squad or within the Napoli community, it's popularly accepted that the key factor for their season has been Osimhen, you know. So that's what it looks like, right?
Yeah, because Olu, our guest from when we did the World Cup episode, he was actually there this past weekend to watch the Napoli game,
right?
And the way he described it was like the stadium was rapturous when they were shouting
Osimhen's name.
So it's one of those things where the Napoli people and Napoli fans know and understand like the importance of Osimhen, which is probably why he's probably just happy. He hasn't said anything about it. I don't expect him to say anything about it. But the Napoli people, the people who are probably important to him in Napoli around this, they recognize his value. So that part is clear, like you said.
Yeah.
But for Serie A to do this, they are not beating the racism allegations anytime soon, bro.
Man, it's crazy. But you know, even the Napoli, was it the Napoli president just the other day? I don't think it's more than a year ago, where he was saying something about like not buying African players anymore, you know, not wanting to release Osimhen or his African players for the Nations Cup. You know, I mean, I feel like we even spoke about it on an episode at the time. You know,
yeah, was it just him? But I think that one was among a larger thing. Like, in fairness, I want to like call them out specifically on it, but it wasn't just them, it was a lot of
you're right.
EPL teams were doing it and stuff like that. So, that one is just like a general, like European football not respecting AFCON issue. And I can't specifically pinpoint Napoli for that.
Napoli, okay,
oh, yeah. Shout out to Victor, man. I'm so happy for him. Congrats. I don't think there's been, and my memory may be short, I don't think there's been any Nigerian at the forefront of a title charge like this in major European league.
Like ever.
No.
Speaking of titles, Madrid just won the Copa del Rey. And I think bigger of all, they won the race for Jude Bellingham. What's the buzz like? And can we use this to segue into the Champions League?
Before we go into all that, let's pay our respects to some of the new kings that have been knighted. King Karim Benzema, 25 trophies for Real Madrid. All the trophies they have won as a club. He joins elite like Marcelo, who have equally achieved greatness. King Eden Hazard won everything possible to have won.
Man, that fat king should go and sleep a bit.
in a Madrid shirt. Camavinga actually now has also won everything it's possible to win.
Wait, sorry. Did you say Hazard has now won everything that is possible to win in the Madrid shirt?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Because last season was League, Champions League, and FIFA Club World Cup.
Yeah.
This season is Spanish Super Cup, Copa del Rey. Yeah. He's seasons, man. They've completed football.
Yeah. That's actually mad.
Yeah. I was really, really, really like jealous about the Bellingham signing, man. Or the alleged Bellingham signing. It looks like they're about to have like the craziest midfield for the next 10 years.
I blame Arteta for all this, man. Arsenal fans getting jealous of Madrid. You guys have so much.
You talk like we're not meant to enjoy good things.
I have no comment with regards to that still, but.
But no, shout out to Madrid, man. And shout out to Florentino Perez. It's weird. If you had told me during the Galactico era, he'd be able to like revamp and target their transfer policy where they are getting quality young talent that sets them up for a long time, I would have looked at you sideways. But hey, man, he's done it. He's making sure Madrid is not.
He didn't build in squads. You know, shout out to Carlo Ancelotti for making Perez look good, because I don't think there's many managers in the world that could have handled the transition or this transition that's happening from old guard to new guard in the way that Ancelotti is doing so seamlessly.
Ancelotti is a quality manager.
Any other manager maybe aside from like the Peps and Klopps of this world. If you give any other manager that Madrid role, they flop, man. I don't think many managers have like the flexibility he has to be like putting Camavinga in left back and just working seamlessly, like breaking out Rodrigo while at the same time keeping Benz. The guy is trying. There's like 4 or 5 veterans in that team. And at the same time, the young stars are still having their moment to break out.
Yeah, you're actually right about that.
Yeah. And it's weird because I think everybody talks about who Carlo Ancelotti is as a person, right? They say first and foremost, like,
he's a good person.
A coach that cares about your family type thing. So I think that's one of the big things that also helped. But it's also interesting. I think he's a very quality coach, but I don't know. Like, he wasn't terrible at Everton, but he struggled. And that could have been, like, a larger symptom of Everton as a club, not...
Which I think it is.
Not him, But it was like there was a comment he made, right? Like, there's a difference between the way you drive in a Ferrari and the way you drive in a Fiat or something like that.
Right.
With all due respect to Everton. And I think he's just one of those coaches that are a Ferrari type of...
The Ferrari driver.
Exactly. You give him quality players, technical players, he'll squeeze everything from them. You give him mid-table passion merchants, then he will squeeze passion from them.
Speaking of like partial rubbish that Ancelotti had to squeeze, you know James Rodriguez is retiring.
Yeah, bro.
That guy's like 31 years old. How old is he?
Yeah, man, he's like 31. But again, I think he's in like Chivas now or one kind of random league. But yet again, he's having to be released by the club. So this time he's retiring.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Hold our thoughts, man. Hammers of Diem.
Words. Do you guys think Madrid can beat Manchester City?
I think they're the only team that can beat
Manchester City.
I really think they're the only team. Because I'll put it this way, right? And we've spoken about this a bit. The thing that makes Madrid so good, like tactically, they set up well. I'm not going to be one of those people that is like, oh, like Madrid doesn't have good tactics. Tactically, Madrid set up well, right? It's just the tactics seem too simple sometimes for such a high quality team. But tactically, Madrid set up well. There are things they want the opposition to do too. Carlo Ancelotti is a very good coach. So they set up, you ask the players, they talk about the way he sets them up. But what sets out Madrid is when that moment of chaos happens, they have A, the experience on the pitch, and two, the technical prowess where regardless of where you put their players, right? Even if pace and power is not necessarily there, the technical ability of their players is so high, it's disgusting. Where in chaos, they are composed, they know how to navigate it, they now also have the experience. And then they are surrounding that experience, like you said, with young legs, with Vinicius, with Rodrigo, with Valverde, Camavinga, people willing to run for the team and do some of that dirty work too. So... A lot of what City does, City can play you. I think one of the big things like Guardiola has done is him too, he's evolved, right? He's realized that, yeah, there are core things he wants to do, but in certain different game states, there are things he has to adjust to. Guardiola changed the way he played Arsenal, specifically because he respected the way we press, right? So Guardiola will adapt to what he thinks Madrid will give him. I just think that when that moment of chaos happens, I trust the Madrid players more than I trust the City players.
So I mean, it's an interesting one. So for a long time, I was definitely thinking Madrid will win the game or over the two legs. But the more I think about it, really, City should be heavy favorites. And I think they are actually with the bookies to get the job done over two legs. Like, with the dominance that they have as a team, the fact that they're all, like, huge, massive technical tanks with the chaos of Erling Haaland right now as well. It looks like to me they're going to do the treble. I hate to say it, but I'm resigning to that belief based on what I believe is the quality and depth and the physicality of the team. More importantly, I think because the team is so physical, they'll be able to withstand those moments of chaos that you're referring to that will...
I get what you're saying, but it's not like Madrid are lacking physical players too.
True, but you know, who has more?
I get what you're saying.
It's going to be a great game though. Great. I'm glad we get to have two of these instead of one in the final. And I guess the Milan games is 50-50, no?
Do you know what's so funny? So tomorrow I'm working from... Usually I work from the office on Tuesdays. On Mondays, but today I worked from the office from home because I knew we were recording, and tomorrow I'm working from home specifically because of that Madrid game. Wednesday, I don't need to watch Milan game. I can see the scoreline after. But no disrespect to the Milan teams, man. It's just, you know, your style of football doesn't look like it's gonna be a banger.
Just to pay them as much respect as we can, I have been following a little bit the Serie A right now because the race for the Champions League spots is crazy at the moment between Juventus, Lazio, Milan, Inter, and Roma. There's kind of like 4 points that separates all those teams, and only three of them can make it. But Inter Milan are on hot form at the moment, basically. They're killing it right now. Lautaro is finding a rich vein of form. Lukaku is finally scoring again when he's used. And they're actually playing good football. And on the other hand, in Milan, Rafael Leao has been on fire. And then they scored another wonder goal last week. But Leao is injured. He came off after 11 minutes.
Is he injured for the Champions League game?
It's unclear as of now. All we know is that, you know, like, he's uncertain. I think he's probably going to miss the first one, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. So it's looking picture.
You know, the other interesting thing that could happen in Italy is because, you know, Juve's points deduction, they appealed and they won. But yes, there's an appeal of that. And if they lose it, they drop out of top four. So it will be interesting how that all plays out.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. Mourinho is also in another European final with Roma. Is it Roma West Ham in the Conference League?
No, Mourinho is in Europa League now.
Oh, Mourinho is Europa League?
Yeah.
Oh, mad though. Versus PSV or who?
Let me sanity check. Versus Bayern Leverkusen. Semi-final.
What's the game? Xavi Alonso made it to the Champions League semi-final. Shit.
Yo, shout out to Xavi, man. Intelligent players doing a madness always brings me joy.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the women's game. I guess this topic that is especially close to our hearts, Damola, as Arsenal fans. A couple of people might have seen this recently on social media pop up, this, you know, this attention being paid to the fact that a lot of women in the game get ACL injuries. Like at Arsenal, we have four.
First off, before we go into that, I want to shout out the Arsenal team. They did fantastically well. They lost to a weird mistake, and, you know, mistakes
happen. Right, I went to that game. You know, it was a full Emirates Stadium.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I'm also happy about that.
The women's team, yeah, it was a very interesting atmosphere.
What game are you talking about? The Wolfsburg one?
Yeah. Yes, the UEFA Champions League semi-final. Yeah, you know, big time.
It's so funny. They did the hard work in the first leg, and in the second leg, it just felt like a lot of things weren't going their way because they had lost Williamson in between those two legs, I believe.
Mm.
If I remember correctly, then on the day, another person got another ACL. And the amount of ACL.
I'm honest with you, Wolfsburg were just like a much better team, like no cap. They played better.
Yeah.
For sure.
But it's weird, right? Like, watching that game, I think Arsenal's, like, all our players fit. I think we win that game.
Yeah.
Which was the sad part, because they were, first of all, I'm not going to lie, the fact that they were in the semi-finals without no Miedemann, no Beth Mead, no Williamson was very surprising to me, because those players are very key and instrumental.
That's like if all the Gabbies were missing
from
that team.
But yeah, I think for me, though, that's a very concerning part. Apparently, women getting ACLs is a relatively common thing in world football. And Arsenal, we have been cursed. We've had four this season. And it's one of those weird ones where I think I before today's recording, I was reading articles on it. And it's one of those things where it's like negligence. Or where they say, like, the world isn't built for women or women are afterthought in a lot of things. It's a more research needs to go into it to have a definitive answer. But it's one of those things where, like, the way people train, the way physiology is different from women, like, those considerations aren't even put into, like, designing the boots they use. Another thing is, like, the quality of pitches they generally play on is inferior to what the men's equivalents play on. And some of, like, the training habits and stuff, maybe there are slight things they need to train differently when it comes to the PTA for women and stuff like that. Research hasn't gone into that, unfortunately. And who knows? I think football has an opportunity to be a trailblazer there in the sense that as the women's game grows, more money is going to come into the women's game. And a lot of that money needs to be put into, like, how do we keep our players healthy? How do we keep our players fit, man?
Because development, baby.
Yeah, because it's, I don't know about you, man. I think, who's the head of UEFA again? Why am I forgetting his name?
Infantino, or is that?
Infantino is FIFA. But let's even say Infantino. I think Infantino will riot if before that World Cup final, Messi, Mbappe, like key players on both sides were out because of ACLs.
True.
I think like even Barcelona, the women's team that have been doing so well. I don't know if it was the last final they played or the one before where Asisat missed it because of another ACL or something crazy like that. So yeah, the clubs need to figure it out, whether it's like the training, whether it's the
there was also something to do with maybe I don't mansplain, but like there's also genetics involved as to women's knees being weaker.
The hip. Yeah, you're right about that. Look, from a biological standpoint, the hip connect to the knee is a significant part because the impact the ACLs happen is different. Like, I feel like with men, there's a lot of like non-contact ACL injuries, whereas with the women game, is like minor contact things you look at and like, and that shouldn't have led to anything serious. And it so yeah, there's definitely a biological factor, but again, that's where the whole thing with bias in boots making and things come across is like there's been negligence, so there hasn't been research to say, okay, for a fact, for our women players, this is what we need to do to, you know, protect their knees.
Okay, so me, I have two pointers. First of all, the chairman of UEFA is Alexander Seferin.
Thank you.
Yeah, but then the Arsenal women. I feel like you give like a pretty sweet summary of what's happening over there, because you ladies are about to not qualify for the Champions League next season. Do you know that?
Yes,
yeah, it's
very much well aware that United are top to league.
That is correct, we, again, boy.
So, in context, though, we have two games in hand. So,
life is dynamic. No, you have two games in hand and a match versus Chelsea, if you don't mind. If you are so kind as to take a point away from Chelsea, then Man United would, you know, be in pole position to actually win the female league.
The top three or the top two that qualify for the
I think it's the top three.
Okay.
I think it's the top three.
So we just need to pip City.
This season, Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea were in the Women's Champions League. United have never so much as qualified, and now we are about to win the damn thing. That is absolutely correct.
Also, side note, your owners are terrible for not investing in that team. Like, shout out to the team.
What do you mean not investing in that team? You mean not investing more, or what do you mean not?
Yeah,
I talk about Man United. Why? What are you saying?
Yeah, the women's team. They've had very shitty conditions. Like, they are doing well despite those shitty conditions.
Right. Right. Me, from like an observer, like as a fan, you know, I have come from like, oh, why don't my club have a female football team, to, oh, now we have one. Can we, you know, make it to the Champions League? Can we ever qualify? And now we're about to win league. You know, we are in the final of the Women's FA Cup. Alicia Russo, our striker, she is on top. Like, she, you know, I mean, I think it was Chelsea or Arsenal that offered a world record bid for a female footballer to Alicia Russo of Manchester United. And it was soundly denied. You know, please stay away from our players, by the way. I would appreciate that if you can just focus on other talent elsewhere. But yeah, for me, it's been big progress for Manchester United. But yes, I guess there's always room for more. And I'm sure that the men's conditions are much better than the women's ones. So there's some catching up to do there. So yeah, I'm always welcome.
Yeah. Welcome. Like, it's weird that have they ever played a game in Old Trafford?
I think they have. They definitely have.
The thing about playing a game at Old Trafford is, can you fill up the stadium? You know, there's logistics involved in that. But I'm sure, I think even like this season, they will probably play a game at Old Trafford, because now they are garnering quite a bit of attention just because of how well they're playing. And I feel like that's the way it should be. You play well, you deserve the attention, you get it, and then all the other rewards come flying in.
Yeah, that's true.
Shout out to United Women. I saw that Tottenham is actually going to, for the first time in history, be doing men's game and women's game same stadium, same day.
Same day.
So on the same day, we have two football matches, the men's and the women's game. That'll be a first time for that to be happening in the world.
Yeah, because I know Arsenal, what they try to do is like the big game. So the North London Derby, when we play Chelsea, they schedule it at the Emirates and things like that.
So you can just...
The Champions League game.
Yeah, so you can just come early for the men's game so you can watch the females game, the women's game, or you can stay back in the men's game so you can watch the women's game. Yeah. I think that's a great idea, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's actually an interesting thing that the women's game and even the teams themselves will like benefit from more games being played at the major stadiums, because it's just like free revenue. Because if you think about it, right, match day revenue happens when there's a match. So you have more matches, you can generate more match day revenue, which is why, to Tope's point, the fact that we're able to fill up the Emirates Stadium for the semi-final against Wolfsburg was big. I was pleasantly excited by that. 60,000 people shouting for the women's game. That's beautiful. And long may it continue. Because I was saying long may it continue, because from a football health standpoint, it's better for our club if that's the case. So, yeah, shout out to the women's game.
Ladies and gentlemen, anyway, thank you so much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure. We love you. Interact with the poll that I'm asking to put up the underground, so, you know, give us some connection.
Also, towards the lads' weekend of the season, let us know if there's anything you want to hear. There's going to be a lot of drama, a lot of tears, a lot of joy. You know, maybe a certain Manchester team will make the Champions League. Who am I to say? But it's bound to be very interesting. It's been a crazy Premier League season. Thank you for sticking with us.
Tomorrow, someone will say that Arsenal and Man United are not the main rivals. They say United fans, you focus on Liverpool and Man City, you know. Okay, no, hello.